So, welcome to Writing the Right Rights. This is all about AD security and administration. So if you don't have an AD, you're probably in the wrong place. This came about because I did a couple of blog posts on this and people actually found them useful. I always find it really nice when I write things and people actually like what I write. So that's why I've decided to speak. People might actually find it useful and be able to take something back. So there is a whole lot to cover. I'm hoping I will run to time. So who here is a domain administrator? Who looks after an AD? Yay, lots of you. That's the whole idea. Now, next question. Who here is a manager? Great. You guys are the ones who are going to have to champion a lot of this. So when I'm talking to all the domain administrators here, they're the ones who are going to be implementing it, but you guys are the ones who are going to have to take it further up the chain and say, we need to do this. There is a reason behind it. We have to put this in place. You're the champions. We need your buy-in in order to get this stuff done. If we don't have your support, it doesn't happen. So we're going to start with security, and then we'll move on to the maintenance stuff. So we start with all the scary stuff first, and then go into the nice fluffy stuff. So in my organisation, we recently had an AD security audit done. Has anyone had that done in their organisation? Were you as petrified of it as I was? It was really scary to get that massive report that said, oh my God, there's all these things that are wrong with your Active Directory and you need to fix them all right now. So there is a lot to fix and a lot of things that can go wrong and a lot of things that we do wrong. So one of the things that we got discussed with was pass the hash. So has everyone heard of pass the hash? Everyone knows what pass the hash is? That's great, particularly with a couple of sessions. Jess Payne's session, when she was talking, she's a security expert. I'm not, she is. If you've got security questions, have a chat to her. With pass the hash, that was one of the things that came out of our security audit and where a lot of these things that I'm about to talk to you about came out because of. They're things that we had to do in our environment and things that I've seen other people have had to do in their environment in order to mitigate a few of them. It's also to mitigate the entire attack surface of your Active Directory, so that way it's as secure as you can make it. You're never going to make it 100% secure. So this is not an exhaustive list. This is just my real world examples. I am not from Microsoft. I am just a person. I'm a sysadmin just like you who has an Active Directory who had to put some of these things in place. I figured it would be worthwhile sharing with people because maybe not all of you have had a security audit done. So, accounts. Account security is critical. You need to know how to look after your accounts. You need to know how to use your accounts correctly. And you need to know what your accounts are for. So, everyone has a general account. Normal user account, one you use to log onto your machine, the one you use to do all your day-to-day stuff. How many of you know someone? I'm not going to ask how many of you have it, but how many of you know someone who has administrative rights on their local PC with their standard user account? Thank you. How many of them have access to other workstations? Like they've got admin rights on more than one workstation? What about servers? Any of them domain administrators? Wow. Wow. Okay. So the other one is, what about shared credentials? Who has one administrator account that everyone uses? It's the same account and everyone has the same username and password. Oh, bad. Okay, it sucks, it really does, but the truth hurts. You need more than one account, you really do. So what are they for? You have four accounts, four. So you've got your normal, boring, everyday, day-to-day user account. Now this is the same as everyone else's. It has no special rights. You use it to log on, you access your machine, email, IM, internet, all of that stuff. Then you've got your desktop admin account. Now this is a separate account. This is the one you use that has desktop admin rights on your machine because you're probably going to want to install software or change your settings. It's probably also going to have access on other workstations because chances are, even if you're a server admin, you've probably got some desktop admin responsibilities as well. So that's what that account's for. Then you've got your server admin account. Now, if you're all server admins, this is probably the one you're going to use the most. This is the one that you use to deploy your WSUS updates. This is the one you use to access your SCCM stuff, your SCOM alerts, the one you've got delegated access to inside AD, you deploy your GPOs. That's what this account is for. You will use that one the most. Then you've got your domain admin account. Now, your domain admin account is the big mama of all of your accounts. This one is only used for things that honest to goodness require domain admin rights. We're talking schema changes. We're talking FSMO role shifts. We're talking adding and removing domain controllers. It is not to be used to log onto a normal server and check a service or clear a log file. That's not what it is for. Only things that honest to goodness require domain admin rights. You should never be logging on to a desktop or a server. Now, I should point out here as well, I originally only had this logging on to desktops. Speaking with the guy who ran my AD security audit, should not have done that before I did this talk. He said, no, desktops and servers. So, emphasizing that just for us, you don't use it on anything other than domain controllers, ever. It never logs onto your desktop. It never logs onto your servers. That's not what it's for. That's why you have a domain admin account. It's only for domain admin stuff. You have a desktop admin account to do your desktop admin stuff and a server admin account to do your server admin stuff. So you want to look after your accounts. So AD delegation is a wonderful thing. Most of you will probably have played with AD delegation to delegate access to your help desk to do stuff. One of the things you're going to want to do when you create these accounts is put them into their own OU so you can protect them. So you want to make sure that, for example, your help desk do not have access to your domain admin accounts. You probably don't even want to give them access to your server admin accounts. But you may want to give them access to your desktop admin accounts because they may change passwords for people. You don't want to have to change the passwords for every desktop admin account. For an example, in the organization I work for, we have hundreds of desktop admin accounts. Having to change the passwords for them when they say, oh, I can't log in anymore, it can become a pain. So you may want to delegate that out. The reason you want to do this is because the whole idea of having a domain admin account, you want to restrict it down so that only domain admins can do it. You don't want to give your help desk access to that, really, at all. Kind of defeats the purpose of having it in the first place. So, this one should be a little bit obvious. The idea is to limit the scope of a compromised account. So, you want to try and keep groups that have access to do things that could become potentially dangerous empty. So, your schema admins group and your enterprise admins group should have no one in them. If you need those rights, you elevate yourself. You go back, give yourself access, do what you need to do, and then remove yourself. Everyone, we will all need to have domain admin access. That's just the way it goes. That's fine. So, understandably, your domain admin account's a little bit different. The other thing is, I've only got two groups there. There are more. We're talking like your print operators. Check that one out. And your built-in administrators group. You don't really need to have anyone in that one either. So just go back and check the groups that might have rights that you don't want other people to have. So if your account gets compromised, you want to make sure you're in the least number of groups possible to do damage. How many is too many? It's really a weird question. So I recently was decommissioning a Server 2003 domain. And we won't even get started on Server 2003 decommissions. If you want to hear me rant for like 3 hours about Server 2003 decommissions, feel free to come and see me afterwards. But I was decommissioning this domain, and I thought, while I'm decommissioning, I'll just take a look and see how many people are domain admins. 60. Not 16, 60. Now, there is no way that many people needed to be domain admins in that domain. It's just not possible. So check your domain admins group. See who's actually in it, who actually needs to be a member. So sometimes, at least in my organisation, not everyone in our ops team is a domain admin. In fact, not everyone even in our identity team is a domain admin. Limit it to who actually needs it. Who's got the skills? Who's not going to break things? Password security. Now, password security is, for me, almost as important as account security. If you've got an insecure password, you've got an insecure account. That's just the way it works. So you want to make sure you're looking after your passwords. Now, we as sysadmins, we're really, really bad at this. We do things for expediency. Don't worry about it. We'll just set the password to never expire and it'll be fine. We'll fix that later. How many of you actually go back and fix it later? I'm not seeing any hands, man. So these are the things that we need to be doing to look after our passwords and make sure we're actually, you know, doing things right. Now, I didn't think this needed to be said. This slide only got added about 2 weeks ago. I read a report. Now, I'm really sorry if any of you are from government in WA. There was a report that came out. I can hear laughing. There was a report that came out that said some audits were performed of government departments in Western Australia, and the auditors were able to get into the systems on the first try because they guessed the password. Because the password was password. Surely this is a no-brainer. Surely we should know that we don't use defaults. Now, you're all going, well, duh, I already know that. We shouldn't be using password as a password. That's fine. The problem is that oftentimes the systems that have this set up have been set up before you even arrived. You've inherited an environment. You've come in. You're doing all the right things. But there's been stuff that's been built up before you. So go back and check them. There's a good chance that there's probably going to be... Look in your password vaults. I guarantee you, you will find one account with some kind of stupid default password. Root for a root account. SQL for an SQL admin account. Fix those ones up. Get rid of them. Make them more secure. Now, I know a number of admins who do this, and they would never admit it out loud, but they have those four accounts that I showed you. And when the password expires on their standard user account, they change it and then change all the others to match, which kind of defeats the purpose of having these accounts. So if you have a distinct naming convention in your organisation, which most organisations, well, it's best practice, it's not that hard for an attacker to go, well, I've got the password for that account. I might just try it on that account as well and see if it works. So keep them separate. Make them unique. The other one is, Oren mentioned this in his 30 Bad Habits talk, if any of you heard it. Don't use your passwords online. Things get compromised online. Things get attacked online. LastPass got attacked. So you want to make sure you're not using your work passwords online. You don't want to use them for any of the accounts that you use online. Keep them separate. Service accounts are another one. A lot of people have service accounts and they use the same passwords on their service accounts. Different service accounts, same password for all of them. Make them different. Now, Russ would also like me to point out at this point, and he made notes in my slides for me, for service accounts, because we're not changing them as frequently, make the passwords long and horrible. It's not very likely you're going to be logging in with these accounts. Make them disgusting. 20, 30 characters, hideous ones that no one will ever remember. Now, I'm not talking about your standard user accounts or even your admin accounts. I'm talking test accounts, service accounts, training accounts, shared accounts. Every account in your organisation should have some kind of password expiry. It shouldn't be set to not expire. This isn't hard. Running the PowerShell script that goes through and takes a look and tells you which accounts have password doesn't expire, that's what you want to do when you get back. Take a look at those accounts. Set it so that they have some form of password expiry. Part of the thing is, we've got ways to manage this now. Service accounts used to be a bit tricky, but we've got managed service accounts and group managed service accounts. And because I'm not from Microsoft and I haven't fully drunk the Kool-Aid yet, I know that they don't work for absolutely everything. There are some things that they don't work for. But that doesn't mean you can't set a password expiry on them. Make them expire in a year, but make them hideously complex. So, most organisations are a little behind the times with this one. They tend to like making their users change their password really frequently. I know my organisation is. And that can get really complicated because users don't like having their passwords change on them. They really don't. So they make them insecure. So they put a number on the end or they add something on the end that they can just repeat. That's great. Or how many of you have gone into someone's office and seen a post-it note stuck to a keyboard or a monitor or just to the side of the desk with a password? How many of you? Seriously, hands up. Nearly everyone in the room. It is not secure. Post-it note password storage, not secure. So with this one, Microsoft's a little bit ahead of the curve. They say we should have a 14-character passphrase. So I know I've been using the word password because that's what we're all familiar with, but they say a 14-character passphrase as a minimum, and then we can increase the change time. So we can say, how about we have maybe a 3-month password change or a 6-month password change? Users will be very grateful for this. So this is a big one for me. I would like to see this one implemented in my environment, and I don't think it will ever happen. So what's better than one password policy? Lots of password policies. I love fine-grained password policies. I'm the one that's implemented all of the ones that are in my environment. So when you've got your distinct accounts, you may want to make them a little bit more secure by changing the password policy. So if your default password policy is, say, 14 characters and changed every 3 months, maybe for your domain admin password policy, you'll say, I want that to be just a little bit more secure, so we'll do 18-character passwords and have it change every 4 months or 6 months. The other one you can do with this, which is really cool, if you have an application that requires a specific password length, and we all have them, you need to have only 8 characters, no more and no less. Rather than lowering down to the lowest common denominator for everyone in your domain, you can set up a fine-grained password policy for the users that use that application and say, only those users can have an 8-character standard user password. Everyone else has to have this nice, secure 14-character password so that you're not making everyone insecure in your environment. Passwords do not belong in group policy preferences. This still happens. Now, Microsoft did actually remove the ability for you to do this back in May last year. So MS14025 is the patch that came out that blocked you from doing this. Now, that's great, but all it did was prevent you from making new ones or changing ones that existed. If you put them in place, they are still there. So you may want to go back. I'm not going to get anyone to raise hands because it's probably a little embarrassing. But if you do have passwords in your group policy preferences, go back and remove them. And I'll explain why. When they're put in group policy preferences, they're stored in an XML file that's put up on your SysVol that everyone can access. And I know what you're all thinking, but it's encrypted, it's fine. It's not. Because the encryption key that's used to encrypt it is publicly available. Now, I'm sure we all have that one user who likes to play with things and likes to poke things. They are the kind of user who will go and do this. They will find the XML file, they'll go online, they'll find the encryption key, and they'll end up with the password. Now, if it's in a group policy, good chance you've put it in there because it's running something, it's probably running a script or something, and it's got some form of admin rights. You don't want your users to have that. You really don't. So take it out of your group policies, please. The same goes for any group policy objects. If you've got scripts running, they're clear text. So it's probably up in SysVol, and people can just grab that out. They don't even need to be smart users to be able to do that. Who here has heard of LAPS? Okay, a few of you. So LAPS is Local Administrator Password Solution. It's brilliant. It's really, really cool. You probably want to go back and put this into your test environment, just at least to have a play with it if you don't want to put it into your production environment. So what this does, from what I understand, is any machines that are domain joined, we're not just talking workstations, we're also talking servers, it will randomize the local administrator password for that machine. So every machine has a different admin password and store that in a secure attribute in your AD that you can then set up who's got access to, which is great. So you can say, the help desk and my desktop support guys have got access to be able to see that. But it also means that if someone gets access to that password for that machine, it only works on that machine. It won't work anywhere else. It's a really great idea. You want to do this. This is another really cool one. You want to prevent your local accounts from being able to log on remotely. So on your local workstations, you want to prevent your local administrative accounts from being able to remotely access other machines. So if you can't put in LAPS straight away, you want to try and at least get this in because this is really important. This minimizes pass the hash. So I'm going to have to read a little bit. So there was a new SID that was brought out in Windows 8 and 2012 R2. Now that SID, there are two SIDs. One says this account is a local account, and the other SID says this is a local account and a member of the local administrators group. That's the important one. So what you can do using user rights assignment is say anything that is a local user and a member of the administrators group on that machine cannot log on via network service and cannot log on via remote desktop service, which prevents anyone from being able to access that machine remotely. To be able to access it, they have to physically be in front of it. Now, you may want to do that for all of your local accounts, just be a bit warned. Microsoft have said that for some services, it can break things. So for clustering, you don't want to do this for all of your local accounts. If it's a local admin, sure, but if it's just a local account, be wary and take a look at what services you're running. So servers. Now, I'm not just talking about your domain controllers. I'm talking about all the servers in your environment, because an Active Directory is only as strong as its weakest link. So your servers are prime targets. They have open ports, they're running stuff, your users know they exist, they know their names. They are things that people will go for. So you want to make sure you're looking after them. Patch, patch, and patch again. How many people here actually patch their servers every single month? Most of you, awesome, because WSUS really isn't that hard. It's easy to push out patches. Microsoft release security and critical patches to our servers every month, and a lot of these patch critical vulnerabilities and remote execution vulnerabilities that we don't want people to take advantage of. So make sure you're patching your servers. The other thing is, make sure you're patching any applications that are on your boxes. Look at what's running on your servers. Take a look at the applications that are on it. Speak to your vendor. Make sure you've got support and you're updating those applications. So the opposite to no domain admins on workstations and servers is only DAs on DCs. Now, I know that seems pretty obvious, but there's a catch to this one. Who has access to your data center? Who's got access, if you've got them running on VMs, who's got access to your VM infrastructure? Is it only your domain admins? Is it only people who've got domain admin rights? Because if you have physical access to the machine, for all intents and purposes, you have domain admin rights. Go and audit who has access to the physical domain controller. If that's a VM, who looks after your VM infrastructure? If it's a physical machine, who looks after your data center? Who's got access to the console? These people you have to trust. If they're not domain admins already, they're people you would trust with domain admin access. Who actually needs to be involved in a trust? So when you trust a domain, a lot of people put in a trust and they go, yep, no, I trust that domain, that's awesome. Does everyone in that domain actually need access to my domain? If there's 10,000 users in that other domain, maybe only 300 or 400 need access to mine. Look at using selective authentication. Look at saying, they're only coming in to access this specific application. Only those users need to come in. The other one is trusts can get put in place and can get chucked in just because you're doing something. Audit your trusts. Go back and see what's there. If you don't know what it's for, and you can't find anyone who knows why it was put there, disable it, because it's just another open hole to get into your domain. Okay, so for workstations, if you're patching them properly, if your AV is being updated, if you're doing laps and you're minimizing password, doing all that kind of stuff, you're probably not going to need to do much. So I haven't done much for this one. There is only one slide, and it's pretty full on, and I don't know how many organizations would even put it in place. So with that, an admin workstation is not equal to a user workstation. Now, what this means is, give yourself an administrative workstation. Now, this workstation is locked down to the bejeebers. This thing doesn't access anything, pretty much. It's got special group policies. It's got app locker. It's whitelisted for the apps. You can't install anything. You don't even know the administrative password on this machine. BitLockered, all that kind of stuff. This machine is the only workstation in the world, my Jeremy Clarkson's not that great, but in the world that you can log into with your domain admin credentials. That's the whole idea. It is a secure workstation, and that's what you use it for. From there, you can remote into a VM that runs all your normal boring user day-to-day stuff. So accesses email and the internet, and you can do documents and all that kind of stuff. Now, you may be thinking, do it the other way around. Have a user workstation and then remotely access this administrative workstation. That's not secure. You've got to remember it's down to what you're putting your password into, what physical keyboard you're touching. If your password is going into an insecure keyboard, you've lost. The whole idea is to minimize where you're putting your password, making it as secure as possible. Now, we haven't even done this in my organization. We're looking at it. It is really complicated, and you're going to want to look at what are the pros and cons. So for lots of administrators, it's really hard. When you're looking at doing this, don't try and minimize the security of it just to get it in. There's no point in doing that. If you minimize the security and say, well, we're going to do this part but not do that part, that makes it useless. Look at making it as secure as you physically possibly can. So, Now that I've terrified you with all security stuff you have to go back and fix, we're going to move on to the administration and maintenance. Now, I should let you know, I would have loved to do demos of these, but number one, as a first-time speaker, I was a bit terrified of that. And number two, considering the demo gods are never kind to anyone, I'm like, no, I'm going to be cursed. So not very many demos for this one, but a lot of screenshots. So it is a little bit death by PowerPoint, I'm sorry. We had a roles and knowledge management done. How many of you here have heard of the roles and knowledge management stuff done by Microsoft? Not very many. It's really, really cool. So what they do is they come in and they take a look at the services that you're doing, and then they work out where the boundaries lie and what you need to do in order to keep that proactively running. Now, if you get an AD one done, oh my God, is there a lot you need to do to make sure your AD is working properly? You wouldn't think there is, but there is a lot of proactive maintenance that you need to do to make sure your AD is running. So the stuff that I'm going to talk about here is stuff that we got out of that. Now, it is not exhaustive. There was no time for me to include everything because there is just so much stuff you need to do. But this was the stuff that we found that was really useful, that's helped us sort of mitigate a few issues and prevent a few minor disasters that you might find useful in your environment. So that's the whole idea of this. Now, don't worry about writing stuff down or taking photos. I did this talk purely based on a blog post that I did. So in that blog post, it lists every single command you need to run that's listed in this talk. It even includes a few extras. So at the very end, you will have to write down one URL. Also, I like it when people visit my blog. So there's a lot to get through. So these are the big things that we're going to be talking about. So you can incorporate a lot of these into a script to run daily or weekly. I will admit, this is a little terrifying. I will admit in front of all of you, scripting is not my forte. Keyboards die when I try and script or try and do programming. I go through far too many of them, so I like going, I need to do this script. Hey, do you want to write this for me? So I'm not good at scripting, so I'm not going to give you the script because I'm not the one that wrote it, unfortunately. But I'm sure you're all much better at it than I am. These are the building blocks that you can use to put into a script. So everyone knows that AD replication is critical, unless you have only one domain controller. Who here has only one domain controller? No one. Yay! So if you've got two, you want to make sure that things are replicating properly. That's the whole idea. If you've got at least two, that things are actually going between them. That, you know, if someone changes a password over here, that it comes over here. That's the whole idea. So the rep admin commands that I'm going to show you are the ones that you want to run to make sure that your replication is working and is running and is efficient and effective. I like those words. And that when you're looking at your domain, you know that things are replicating properly. So this is a high-level check. This one monitors not just the domain, so top level, all the way from the forest all the way down, and it monitors all of your domain controllers. So what we've got here, come over here so I can see. So up here you've got the list of domain controllers, and you'll see all of your domain controllers listed here. Now, here is your largest delta. What that is the amount of time between replication to its partners. So that's, you don't want that to be very big. When we had our RKM running, we were told about anything longer than an hour, you want to start worrying. So 7 minutes, 9 minutes, that's really good. Then you've got here, you've got your fails and your total. Should be pretty obvious, fails will never be greater than total. So these are, I realize that's pretty obvious, but when I was actually testing this on someone, they went, so how many fails can you get? I'm like, really? Really? So the total here is actually all that is, that's each of the naming contexts per DC. So if I had a fail here, you would see the percentage would be 20%. If I had one fail, 20%. Everyone can do the maths on that, right? Errors is the big one. Errors is what you want to pay attention to. If a domain controller cannot be contacted, that is where it's going to show up. So that's where we pay attention to a lot of stuff. If we can't see a domain controller, like I accidentally shut one down, sorry, that's where it's going to show up. So you want to pay attention to this. I'd run this probably daily, just to get an overview of how everything's running. If you're comfortable with your environment, you don't necessarily have to run it daily. It's entirely up to you. I'm just giving you what we do and how it works for us in our environment. This is a really cool one. Now, you can run show REPL without the errors only. No one really cares when stuff is working fine. You only want the errors. You only care when stuff breaks. So this is a great example. No errors, considering it's a test environment that had literally been up for maybe an hour and a half. That's not really surprising. But I have to say, when I've been running this in my environment at my work, I am yet to see an error in that command. I have never seen one show up there before. So if it does show up for you, I'm really sorry. I can't help you. I don't know what to do if it shows up there. What it means is that there is replication issues. So you're going to want to take a look most likely at replication log and find out what's going on. Your event logs, your best friend. Seriously, I realize it's time consuming to go through them, but use them. Now, I'm going to have to read some notes here because some of this even confuses me, okay? So what this is talking about the up-to-dateness vector. That's the UTDVEC. So it's talking about the update sequence number on each of your domain controllers. So these pretty numbers right here. So you probably want to run this at the same time as your REPL summary when you're running. So if you run your REPL summary and it's been, say, I don't know, about 10 minutes, you can expect that these numbers will be different between each other. It's normal to see a difference. You want to see a difference. It means that something has changed. That's cool. What you don't want to see, which I've seen, is a difference of, say, 3,500. That's not very good. So say if you hypothetically accidentally joined 6 domain controllers to the domain and promoted them all at the same time. Not that anyone would ever do that, I promise. Don't laugh at me, Ken. So I actually did that, and that's what I saw. I saw something like 7,500. I'm like, oh, God, I've broken it. No. So if you do see a massive difference, it means something is going on. You want to pay attention to it. Take a look at it. It means there's either mass loads of replication happening or something is broken. This one's also really good. So this is viewing the inbound replication requests that DC has pending to be on the same page as all of its others. Now, it won't always be at zero. It's pretty normal to see a couple sitting in there. That's fine, particularly depending on the size of your environment. It's not good to see, like, I don't know, 20,000, which is what I ran after I added those domain controllers. And it really did not look pretty. I'm sitting there going, oh, God, this is broken. But yeah, so seeing a couple in there is fine. That's what you want to see. It's not too bad. If these get higher, that's when you want to take a look further. You want to check your replication logs, figure out what's going on. I recommend this one in particular, run this one daily. It gives you a baseline, so you kind of understand how much things are changing sort of around the morning. That way, if something big does happen and you do see a big jump, you know where your baseline is. And this is the last one for the rep admin stuff. So this lists the failed replication events as detected by your knowledge consistency checker. So this one, you should spot stuff in your other commands, but this one at least tell you that there's stuff going on. Now, if you see stuff here, things are very broken. You want to check them out. You want to figure out what's going on. That's another one I recommend running daily. I will say, when I've been doing this one, I am yet to see anything in that command. Even when I broke mine, I was yet to see anything in that one. So I realized I hadn't done too much damage. So, your FSMO roles. Everyone knows what the FSMO roles are, right? Flexible single master operations role. So these are the things that don't lend themselves to multi-master mode replication. They exist on one DC at a time. You can't have them running on two. So the whole idea of this is to check where they're sitting. Now, they're not likely to change all that often, but it's a good idea to know where they are, particularly if you're looking at doing maintenance, and also if you're looking at adding in other domain controllers into your environment to work out where things are sitting and if you can shift them around. So you don't want them to magically change. So this command lets you check where your FSMO roles are sitting. Now, slight side note, if you're planning on moving them, transfer them, don't seize them. Seizing gets really ugly, so you want to try and transfer if you can. I like splitting mine, as you can see, so I like having my forest scoped ones together and my domain scoped ones together, just for, you know, prettiness, OCD-ness. So you can. I like splitting them. In all of the domains that I look after, they're all split. That's just the way it goes. So this one, probably don't have to run all that often. It's the kind of thing maybe to start with, you run every couple of weeks just to see how it's going. But the big thing I say for this one, document it. Write it down somewhere. For those who know me, I'm really big on documentation and writing things down, mainly so that I can go on holidays and I don't receive phone calls. So big thing, write everything down. Your time settings. Now, making sure your domain controllers are in sync with time is really important. Who here has actually had their time go wrong in their domain and things screw up? Okay, good, a couple of you. One of the big things that I found with time, and I'll get to that one in a second, is things like when you accidentally update your hypervisor and have your PDCE talking to your hypervisor and it goes back 10 hours, things break. They don't really like it. So the two commands that I'm going to show you are setting your time settings to be correct and making sure that they're syncing against the right things, and then checking to see what they are so that you can actually check probably monthly or so to make sure that things are set properly. So, top command, this one here, nice big one, that's what you run on your PDCE. That is the one that synchronizes your PDCE against a Stratum 2, if you've got it, or if better, a Stratum 1. I actually know someone who syncs against a Stratum 1, lucky buggers. This one down here is what synchronizes everything else, not just your other DCs, but also your other servers against the PDCE. So that's the whole idea of this. You want to make sure PDCE is getting its time from outside and everything else is getting it from the PDCE. That's the whole point of this. You want to make sure everything's in sync. So if you want to check that, you check that with this command. So that lets you query and find out what the time configuration is. So the one that I've got here, you can obviously see NT5DSLocal. That means that it is syncing from the PDCE. This is obviously taken from either a normal domain controller or a member server. If this was coming from the PDCE, what you would see there is all sync, and then underneath it, pretty list of all the time servers it's synchronizing against. If that list is blank, that's bad. So trusts. A lot of organizations have trusts set up to trust other domains and have them come into their environment or go into someone else's environment. Now, some of these are development environments, some of them are test environments, a lot have external production environments. If you don't have trusts in your domain, that's fine. Have an app, check your email, say nice things about me on Twitter. So you want to make sure things are as you want them to be. So this checks what trusts you have in your environment. This lets you see what you're trusting so that you know how everything is. Like the FSMO roles, write this down, put this somewhere so you know what it is. You don't want things to magically change, trusts to magically appear. That has happened. I've run this and documented and gone, that's great. 3 weeks later, magically a trust appears. What is this and why is it in my environment? One of the big things with this one is, when you're checking your trusts, if you're looking at, and I know I said, if you don't know what it is, disable it. Make sure you're checking with other people. Particularly if you're not the only domain admin, someone else might have done it and they may not be as good at documentation as you are. So they may not have written it down somewhere. So like the scripting one, this is a little bit scary to say. I didn't expect this many people to be here. So saying this in front of all of you is a little bit frightening. DNS to me is like black magic. It's voodoo, man. I swear to God, I have no idea. I'm trying to get better at understanding it, but it is. It's black magic to me. It's like PKI. I still don't get PKI. But that's fine. I do understand, though, that it's really important to get DNS working and make sure that it's functioning for your domain to work. DNS isn't working, your domain's not going to work. So you want to make sure that your DNS is configured correctly. Things like your sites and services are set up, you've got the right ports open, that kind of stuff. So that's what these commands are for. So, this is a really cool one. This lets you scour through your domain to find any IP addresses that are coming from a subnet that isn't listed in your sites and services. Now you're going, oh, it doesn't really matter. It does matter. You want all your subnets to be listed. So, as an example, if you've got an IP address coming in from Perth and you're based in Brisbane, head office is in Brisbane, and it's coming in from Perth and it's not listed and it's going to come all the way back across, when there's a domain controller and DFS shares and an SCCM distribution point over there, why would you make them come all the way back here? So you want to run this to find any of the subnets that you don't have listed and make sure they're there. Now, depending on how big your environment is, you may not need to run this very often. In my environment, we run this weekly. Subnets just randomly show up. So we try and make sure we find all the users and put them in so that way they're accessing the right DFS share. They're accessing the right domain controllers. So this is not an exhaustive list. This was part of what came out of RKM for us, and they said, you need to make sure these ports are open, and if they're not, things will break. So that's not just on the domain controllers. That's also on any of your networking devices that are between your domain controllers and your users and anything else that might talk to it. You want to make sure that these are working. They're pretty self-explanatory. For example, if LDAP goes down, your domain is not going to work. So if you don't have that port open, things will not work. How many of you went to the event log, Windows event forwarding thing that Jess Payne ran? I was hoping it was going to be more of you. So event forwarding is really cool. Event log monitoring is really important. So one of the things is, how many of you do have central logging systems? Okay, a few of you. How many of you put your AD logs into that? How many of you put your AD system logs into that? Okay, less hands. What about your DFS logs? Less hands even still. What about your DNS logs? Great, awesome, there's a couple, that's good. The whole idea is if something goes wrong, it's going to show up in your event log. That's what the event log is for. It's a pain to trawl through them. You can do it manually. You've got EventComb MT and things like that, but it really is horrible to do. You could do it with PowerShell. As I mentioned, scripting not great. I like the usability of a logging system. So you want to be able to look at these logs, go through them and correlate stuff. So, system events from your AD. If you see any of these five, things be broke, yo. So, the big one, RID pool depleted. If you see that one, game over, man. Seriously. So, you want to keep an eye on these ones in particular. Pretty much any errors or any warnings that are coming from your domain, that's what you want to keep an eye on, I would think. Depending on how you do your logging system and how you do your logs and how often they roll over as well, that's what's important. I mean, if your event logs roll over super quickly, you're not going to catch some of these. So make sure you're putting them somewhere else. So if you didn't see it, I highly recommend looking at Jess Payne's Windows event forwarding session once it's up on Channel 9, because it will help you with this. DNS events. As I said, DNS not good, but I do know that if they show up, bad things happen. Bad things happen. So you want to make sure that these aren't showing up. Errors and warnings again in your DNS log, but these ones in particular. So if you set your, if you can't log everything and you want to set it up, these are the event IDs you want to set up to forward through. I'm really sorry, but yes, for your security log, you probably do want to look at all of it. Now, if your environment is anything like mine, that means it rolls over really quickly. Ours, I think it's down to about 4 hours for some of our domain controllers. It just rolls over. It's huge, but it just rolls over every 4 hours. So we're pushing it somewhere so we can at least take a look at it. So for this kind of stuff, you're looking for things like repeated access attempts, failed logon attempts, domain admin accounts that are logging in, normal admin accounts that are logging into things that they shouldn't be, things like that. For your directory server stuff, you do want to log all of them. Luckily, it's not quite as big as your security admin stuff, so that's pretty good. The one thing you're looking for in that, again, errors and warnings, but anything that's coming from your KCC and any events from NTDS, any events that come from either of those, pay attention to them. So we did touch on it slightly in the last section, but it does need its own little section of focus. So for this, you're looking at account lockouts, failed logon attempts, and additional removal from security groups. Now, this isn't just for security purposes either. This is proactive maintenance. This is making your users feel warm and fuzzy, I promise. So, account lockout failures and failed login attempts are important to keep an eye on. The failed login attempts, if you went to Jess Payne's session, she mentioned it. Most attackers now know what your lockout threshold is. So if you have 10, they will try 9 times, stop, wait, and do it again. So you want to pay attention to your failed login attempts. Usually it's a precursor to a locked account, and that's great, but the locked account isn't necessarily a security concern. The locked account, however, is something that you can then proactively go and speak to your users about. So I promise users feel really lovely when you go to them and go, hey, I noticed your account's locking a lot against the Exchange server. Did you need a hand changing your password on your iPhone? They really do appreciate it when you actually go to them and say, we noticed this, rather than them coming to you. The other reason you want to go to them about that is because it might not be them locking the account. If they turn around and go, well, I don't have a device and I haven't accessed webmail ever, that gives you a little pause for concern. That lets you go and say, maybe something's happened to that account. pretty much what you're looking for with this one is anything that makes the hairs on the back of your neck stand up. Really does. It's the ones that make you sort of go, oh, something's not quite right. So you want to look after these. You want to look at them. You want to pay attention to them. Now, this will vary depending on how your organisation is set up, but you want to look at least the big three. So you want to look at anyone who's added or removed from these groups. Now, if you've got SCOM in place, it's really easy to set up. We've actually got that set up. So if anyone's added into any of those groups, so if you see a normal user being added into that group, you get to see not only which user account has been added in, but who added it in. So you can go and have a polite chat with them. I haven't listed all the groups you should actually be looking at. There are a few others. So as I mentioned before, probably look at things like your print operators and your backup operators and the default administrator group. If you've got any admin groups that have full admin access to all your workstations, if you've got admin groups that have full admin access to all of your servers, they're the kind of groups you want to monitor. So, running the commands that I gave you just before, it's a great way to look at everything and keep an eye on everything and maintain your environment. But sometimes we change jobs and we inherit an environment and we have no idea where to start. So you're looking at this domain going, I don't know what's broken and what's not. Why am I supposed to fix this? I don't know what. So the whole idea of this is to use one command to take a look across your domain and go, I know exactly what I need to start with. So I've got a really good one. I like this one. This one lets you get pretty much a health check. It's like going off to the doctor and getting a little health report on exactly what's going right and what's going wrong. The dash C, the slash C there, is really important. That means that it is a comprehensive DC diag. It's running pretty much everything against your domain. That's the big one. So from my point of view, when I've run this one, it's been a sort of check all the things, make sure everything's working right. I run this one probably every 3 months or so, and I run it manually and watch the output as it comes out. I dump it into a text file with all my other domain controllers so that I've got a nice big report of what's working and what's not on them. So it's very pretty. Starts off, does all of its initial setup and all that stuff. This is what you want. Passed. Passed is good. Now, I don't actually have any examples of fail, but failures, they will glare out at you. You will see failures as they come up. Fail, bad. So, this is good. Everything's passed. But I do want to pause for a minute on a couple of these. So, your DFSR event, this one here is pretty cool. You will occasionally get, depending on your environment, it pop up and go, you need to check the DFSR event log, something's happened. And you're like, oh, crap. Take a look at the event log and look at the warnings or errors that are showing up and look at the times they're showing up. Oftentimes, the time it's showing up is the same as when your backup's running. So you can totally discount that. If your backup is running at the same time that you're seeing the errors or the warnings in your DFSR event log, chances are the errors are caused because the machine is being backed up. Safe to ignore, don't panic. The other one is the SysVol check, this one here. For some reason, it just likes telling you information just because it can. It's, you know, like that little child that likes tugging on you, but I want to tell you this. Oftentimes, it's just informational stuff that you really don't care about and go, that doesn't matter. It's not a concern. So if you have something pop up here, it's not too much of a worry. Go and check it out. Look at the event IDs that it's pointing at. Look at the warnings. There are things in here you can safely ignore. Check them first, but you can safely ignore a few things that show up there. More passed. Yay. This is what we want to see. You do want to see lots of passed. You want to print it out. You want to be able to give that to your management and say, look, I've got this awesome report that says everything is going great. Aren't I an awesome admin? So anything that shows up in these as failed, chances are you're going to need to go hunting through event logs. You're going to need to go hunting through DNS as well, or hunting through your sites and services. They're the big ones that will come out of this from what I've seen when I've been running them. So as I mentioned, event logs are your best friend when diagnosing anything. So pay attention to them. The other thing I like about this one is you can give it to management because they really like these kind of things. They do. They like knowing that everything's working. You don't necessarily have to go to them with bad news. It's always nice to go to them with good news. Pretty please complete your evaluations. As a first-time speaker, I like it when people say nice things. I also like constructive criticism. So if there was something that I did that you didn't particularly like, tell me about it. So if I get the chance to speak next time, I can perfect it. That's true, I was. I'm wearing shoes today. I didn't wear shoes for my first session. So these are a couple of links to some of the things that are I talked about. So you got the pass the hash stuff. If you don't know about pass the hash or too afraid to put your hand up before, that will give you the lowdown on it. That's really good. Securing Active Directory best practices. As I mentioned, I am not an expert. I'm here to give you real world advice from stuff that we've done. So that's the whole idea. If you want to take a look more in depth, that's something to go off and do. You've got Microsoft Security Compliance Manager. Really great tool. Then you've got your regular AD maintenance checks. Now, that's my blog. Please, everyone, go visit it. Say nice things about it. So up there, that's going to have all the commands that you need that I listed in that maintenance checks thing. So that will have absolutely everything, including a few things that I didn't add into this talk. So everyone taking photos? I'll wait. I'll be good. I'll wait until I don't see any phones. Or you can come and contact me. I'm more than happy to provide some of this myself. So you can hit me up on Twitter. That is probably the best way to contact me. Much to my husband and boss's disgust, I'm pretty much on there 24/7. You can email me as well. I do respond pretty quickly to email. And if LinkedIn is your cup of tea, go for that as well. That is a link to my blog, just the front page. Now, there are a couple of other things there that might be of interest to you. Say setting up an ELK logging server. So there is a full step-by-step post that teaches you how to do that. So that might be one to look at. The other one is advanced group policy management. If any of you are looking at implementing that, I've done a big post on how you set that up in your environment. So that's it. That is pretty much an overview of Active Directory security and maintenance that I've had real-world hands-on experience in. I'm more than happy to take some questions, bearing in mind, not an expert, just have hands-on. But if anyone has any questions, happy to take them.
What's your advice on password management when you've got to manage four accounts, one of which you're going to log into once every 2 months for the domain admin account? It's got to be long and complex. How do you guys manage that password?
So the question was, for those who couldn't hear it and for the recording, how do you manage passwords for the four accounts? How do you manage those complex passwords? Have a good password structure. I mean, if you're doing long passwords, you do want to make them secure and you do want to make sure that they are nice and long. You also want to have some way of structuring your password so that you remember them. So making sure that you're doing something that makes you... I'm good at memorising my passwords. I've got so many passwords that it's just not funny. LastPass is also useful. Password managers in particular I find really handy. For a lot of them as well, if you're not going to be using them very often, you can make them something stupid and then just get someone to reset them. We have that happen with quite a few of ours. So we have some users who have desktop admin rights on their machines. They only need it occasionally to be able to do something. They set it to something stupid that they're never going to remember. It's like a 14-character just jumbled mess. And then when they need to reuse that account, they'll just contact our help desk and get their password reset. So that's one way of doing it for some of them. For us, it's a lot harder. We should be good at remembering passwords, right? Remembering passwords between accounts. If you can use some kind of mnemonic to say, this password is for my normal account, this password's for my desktop account, this password's for my server account, that's probably the way that I go about doing it.
Passphrases are the biggest one. Rather than using complex passwords, use phrases. You make it 30 characters long, but it doesn't matter. Because
this is my stupidly ridiculous long domain admin password.
Start putting common words in, you've completely lost me.
part of the issue with that, I mean, a lot of users are doing that at the moment as well. So when they're making these long, we say passphrases, they're doing exactly that. They're just doing it as a passphrase. They're not adding in any special characters. So when telling your users to make passphrases, make sure you're telling them to, they still need to add in some of those. Most of you will have password complexity turned on anyway. So making sure that they are sticking to the password complexity, even if they are making passphrases. No one else? I get to get down and have breakfast now? Awesome! Thank you very much.